This is the September 3 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Shane Holtorf joins us from Logic Ag Marketing out of Alta, Iowa. And Sherman Newland is here from Zahner Ag Hedge in Hudsonville, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's begin by getting an update, and a bit later we'll get a list, but let's get an update of what you think about crops in each of your prospective areas. We'll start with the one in the combine cab. That is Sherman Newland. Hi, Sherman. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who are listening, and that's everybody except for me who can see Sherman, because he's on Zoom. They're not too far to the west of Terre Haute, actually, in Hudsonville, Illinois. Is in the combine. You're shucking corn today. Can you tell me about that to begin with?
Yeah, it's we're in the combine shelling corn today. Corn's drying out way faster than I expected. Of course, this is sandy, irrigated sand. But a week ago Monday, this was testing 28. Yesterday is in the 20s. Today it's in the teens. So it's drying out faster than I can get it shelled almost at this point. But it's a shorter season corn, right? It's 109 day maturity. But this is, again, this is kind of blow sand, as you might say. So it can dry out really quick on a guy. And the yields, it's disappointing compared to what it was 2 years ago when I had it in corn. I mean, we're still running over 200 well in places where it's irrigated. But, of course, where it's not irrigated, it's not good at all. But that's just part of it. So it's coming in way drier than I thought. This heat's really drying crops out. I think it's got to be hurting some soybeans, top end on that. And, you know, I think the corn should be made out on the clay ground and, you know, so it's going to be drying it down, but it may be hurting it around here as well. With this heat, I mean, 99 degrees out here, pretty hot for this time of year.
All three of you are farmers. I'll turn to you, Shane Holtorf. You're in Alta, Iowa. Remind us where that is in the western part of Iowa, I think middle part, and then let us know what you think things look like in your area.
Yeah, Alta, Iowa, I would call it northwest Iowa. The people in true northwest Iowa would tend to disagree with me. We're about 10 miles north of Highway 20, 90 miles east of the Iowa-Nebraska border is where we sit. And we have been in a fairly dry area here this summer. You know, crops went in lightning quick. 1st of May, everyone was pretty well wrapped up in our neck of the woods, and things looked really, really good up until June. And then it just shut off. And about the time of the Pro Farmer Tour, we got a week of really, really nice rain. Things kind of greened back up, got people excited. And then same as Sherman, it got hot. The humidity left the air and it got windy. And we've started killing this crop a lot faster than we would like. And so, you know, as I told you there, Todd, I think we'll be combining some early planted, short maturity beans on Tuesday. And I guess we'll know where we're starting. And that's not going to be a full bore harvest. You know, we still have stuff that's completely green. So it's going to be spread out. And that's okay. We've been sick of combining 8% beans the last few years. But silage appraisals have started to come back. And guys are genuinely disappointed with those. I would say they're anywhere from 5 to 50 bushels off of where they have been last year, and call it this northwest 12 county area that we kind of sit in here. So I think there's going to be some good stuff out there. Don't get me wrong, but kind of like Sherman, is guys had maybe a little more hope than what they're seeing, but I guess we'll be a lot smarter in 3 weeks.
Can you give me something to give me? Because you said 50 bushels off, but I don't know what that means. As it relates to silage and what actual end yield might have been on that kind of corn.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So we're looking, you know, as an example, the silage appraisals that I've been hearing coming back are anywhere between 175 and 215. Traditionally, you know, we would probably see those the last few years in that 230 to 260 range.
And would that compare to what, because that was planted for silage, would that compare how to what a corn crop that was planted for harvest might be?
Yeah, very similar. I mean, a lot of these guys are just picking a spot out of their corn, you know, their cornfield and going and chopping it for silage and not taking, you know, massive amounts of the field out. So it's going to track pretty darn closely with what they would expect to see their corn yields come in at.
And then Matt there in Windsor, Illinois, about, I don't know, 40, 45 minutes to the south of Champaign-Urbana. What do things look like for you?
You know, there's one of the guys that works out of my office has been picking corn the last 2 days east of Charleston, you know, and they said that, you know, that corn's coming in about 19%. I think they, you know, hand checked it last Thursday or Friday, 24, 25%. So they were shocked, you know, it clearly lost a good point a day. Because typically, you know, when you hand shell, it's going to be at least a couple points wetter. So, you know, at least a point a day right now that stuff's been drying. And as far as we're concerned, you know, I would assume next week at some point we'll go ahead and try to pick some corn. Beans are all turning. As far as prospects, you know, I feel like the corn is going to be maybe an APH type crop a little bit better. I don't know that there's going to be a record set. I do believe, you know, like a lot of areas in the Midwest this year, nitrogen loss with saturated soils in June played a role. We've been out to look, and in some places it looks like best ever, you know, and then you walk 50 feet and it doesn't look like that at all. So I think there's going to be a lot of variability. And quite frankly, I think there'll be a lot of variability in moisture. So it's going to be interesting trying to harvest here this year, especially stuff going in the bin. I think people are going to have to be very cautious how they handle that. But I think in my immediate area, I would say good yields, not great on corn, whereas soybeans, I think, could be pretty special. Getting out in a lot of the beans that we've been in, we've got quite a bit of size to these beans, a lot of pods, and, you know, the rainfall we had in August certainly was a blessing. And so I got to feel like this year's August, I would prefer to last year's August, but I do think the damage to some of these crops was done previous to those time frames.
Now let's get the list of items we want to discuss for the rest of the program. Matt, I'll stay with you. What's on your list?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we've got a USDA report next week. Looking at the Pro Farmer number, with it being so much below USDA, a lot of the trade, I believe, felt, hey, you know, we're looking at a sub 10% stocks to use ratio. Obviously, a big time month in August with Deese being able to close, you know, with that strong monthly close higher than the previous month, and, you know, the best monthly close we've seen in about 3 years. And so, you know, I think that there's a lot of things at play here. If the USDA would come in here, you know, and maybe be a 180 type yield, you know, I don't think that's going to do anything for the bulls. You know, if they're halfway between USDA and Pro Farmer, there's no doubt that it'll keep the fire going, if you will. I think one thing that's been interesting that we want to talk about is the pullbacks we've seen the last 2 days and how well they've been supported.
Shane Holthorf out of Logic Ag Marketing, your list for the day?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good one. To me, you know, production is a lot of the story here. Where are we going to see the USDA come in? But since Matt's going to take that, I'll talk about potentially here the, you know, demand. We're running behind schedule on our new crop corn sales. U.S. corn has definitely gotten expensive compared to Argentina and Brazil. And so what are we going to see for that demand picture?
And Sherman Newland from Zahner Ag Hedge.
Yeah, I mean, everything those guys were saying, absolutely true. I mean, you know, we talk about those, but I mean, the funds are really long right now. I mean, it's kind of rare for them to be this long. I mean, I think they're kind of looking outside of not only our own yield potential or lack of thereof, but you know what else is going on around the world, you know, with Ukraine and Russia, Europe, you know, France and their drought. We're expected to, you know, get some export business to those areas, you know. And then the other thing is, and I think the funds are kind of maybe front running this, is the Super El Nino that's going on, supposedly going to happen in Brazil. I mean, if that would actually happen, I mean, I think you could see, you know, these markets go up a decent amount once we get our numbers here in the U.S. kind of figured out, you know, but that's kind of a little ways up down the road before that does happen. But it seems to me like they're looking at that and saying, hey, maybe we want to go ahead and get in. We don't want to be the last guy buying in case it does hit.
I want to stay with you for just a moment and pick up the Super El Nino or more importantly, Brazil, and think about $12 plus soybeans, maybe $13 soybeans, and what that does in the center west part of Brazil. And the expansion potentially before we might get into a Super El Nino issue. What do you suppose farmers there are thinking?
You know, it's hard to say. I think the prices are definitely helping with what they're wanting to do down there. But you also have the problem out of the Strait of Hormuz with them getting fertilizer. I think that's going to be curtail some things there as well. So, you know, I think they're going to be nervous about it for sure. Now, whether they expand a lot like they typically do, I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see on that front. But, you know, it's kind of like here in the U.S. When you got $8 wheat, does anybody want to plant more wheat? I don't know. Possibly at some point. But, you know, prices do make a difference on guys' decisions.
Would you or will you plant more wheat this year?
Oh, Todd.
You brought it up and you're in the right area.
I know.
And I know you, and I know that you plant
wheat.
I've
had this conversation with several producers around the area. They're all like, oh, if it gets to $8 cash, maybe I'll plant some, but everybody's a little reluctant. But I think $8 wheat will definitely buy some acres around the country. You know, if you can, you know, again, maybe it might buy a lot of acres. It kind of depends on if you can get good wheat seed at this point in time, you know, because it is getting to be that time of year. We got to decide. So I don't know if I will. I kind of have my doubts. I'm getting to where I don't want to get the combine out in the summertime and have to deal with, you know, 100 acres of wheat or so. But I'm sure there will be several producers do it.
Oh, you sound like farmers that probably are in North Dakota that finally got to the corn-soybean rotation as opposed to all the other rotations that they have, and that's why they continue to stay
right
in the corn-soybean rotation. Matt, yeah, that absolutely correct. Matt Bennett, you wanted to talk about this pullback that we've had the last couple of days and how it has been supported in the marketplace. Tell me about what you've seen and what you think it means.
You know, there's a lot of talk about the funds potentially being at a record long for both corn and soybeans. I certainly think that's a possibility. You know, I think people get a little weak in the knees when they hear that. And so there's probably some serious profits that have been harvested here over the last couple of days. You know, but at the same time, there's other people that have been looking for pullbacks to buy this thing. And I think when you talk about, for instance, just going back to what you talked to Sherman about, you know, one of our offices out in Kansas, you know, they've said, you know, if those growers out there can get a rain or two, you're going to see a significant increase in wheat acres out there this year. And so you start thinking about that. And why do people want to continue buying this thing, Todd? I mean, whenever you look at corn, yes, we could mess with the demand. I completely agree with what Shane said there. But at the same time, you know, if this crop comes in much below what it's already forecasted to be, you know, you could make the case that we need to buy more corn acres for next year. Soybeans, you know, we planted 5.7 million more acres this year. Current forecast is that we're actually going to go down as far as stocks go. So, you know, we need to buy some bean acres. So will we have 183 and a half available? You know, I'm not sure that we will. And so I do think that some of these pullbacks are being supported. You know, wheat acres probably going up. I would say you'll get a few more cotton acres with 90 cent cotton. You know, it's just going to be tough to have all the acres available that we need. And I think moving forward, the trade is going to continue to buy these dips until we sort this out. You know, if you come in here in September and you really loosen up the balance sheet, it's going to be a different feel, but I think it'll take maybe some interesting math if this yield is much lower than what it's currently forecasted to be.
Now, Shane, Matt, I'll stay with you for a second and ask Shane to expand on this. And I'll use you, Matt, as a proxy for Sherman, because I see he managed to get the load off of his combine, the sim, and he just got started again. So I'm going to let him set for a second. I really want to know, on the crop that you expect to harvest, do you think that it is out your backyard? Does it represent kind of that 2 bushels off of where the average would have been, or what the average USDA said at that 183 instead of the 180.7? And then I'll turn to Shane and ask him in his backyard what he's thinking it looks like, and have him put that in some national prospects. So, Matt, do you think you're do you feel like you're off that that area that allows the crop nationally to come down 2 bushels, and particularly out of your backyard? What do you suppose?
I think in our backyard, again, I don't see a lot of records being set by any means. I think whenever you hear a lot of people setting records, like we heard last year, of course, that national yield record, of course, was set due to the fact that so many people had record crops. We certainly don't see that here. Now, if you had a 180, that'd be the second biggest crop we've ever seen. So that's still an awfully large crop. But taking 2 bushels off, are you going to do it balanced on the back of Central Illinois? I'm not sure that's the case. I do think, though, that the Pro Farmer Crop Tour highlighted there's a lot of minor issues here and there. Some of them are more major than others. I already talked about nitrogen loss, but clearly warm nights had an impact on pollination. It's something they saw in the tour, in several fields as they moved across both sides. And so, I think that you add all of these things together, and it just puts you in a spot where it's really tough, to get to that record type yield, even that we saw a couple of years ago, 179. I mean, where am I at today? I think you could probably take a couple bushel off and get down to, I'm probably at a 178.5 right now. It's not an official guess. It's just kind of where my head's at. Our team hasn't come up with our number yet, but we're getting close. That's just where I'm at.
And then, Shane, if you would pick up, what's your backyard look like? And what do you think the prospects are for yields next week?
Yeah, I mean, if we were playing on our backyard alone, I would have probably agreed with the initial USDA number early on. Like I said, things were off to a phenomenal start here. But expectations have really started to fade, and can kind of agree with Matt. We're going to have pockets, even within counties that have really, really good yields that caught that thunderstorm, that the others didn't, and vice versa. And so it's hard for me, but if I look at this thing and how it's finished, and I'm sitting on an off ramp here in the middle of South Dakota. I've driven through Nebraska on my way out here yesterday, and it's just putting that all together, I have a tough time seeing us push to that 180 as well.
And then, Sherman, because you live and farm kind of in the area, relatively speaking, where Matt would be, I would think your ground's, well, the sandy ground's different, but ground's not.
Yeah.
Terribly different, I suppose. And you were on the Pro Farmer Tour, and you went right, probably very close to where Shane is. Oh, by the way, Shane, I bought a car in Holstein, a pickup truck in Holstein, Iowa, once. Not very far from you.
Right, just down the road. Yep.
Fantastic dealership. I want to know what you think about both places, Sherman, and what you think those look like. And just as a reminder to folks, you have been through that area of Iowa nearly a decade now, I think, almost.
Yeah, almost. I think this is my 9th year being on Crop Tour. To be honest, I mean, I drove from here to Northern Illinois and back, and then, put 3,000 miles in my truck. Going around the country looking at the different crops. They looked better from the road than what they actually were. I thought some of the best looking crops was when I got back home, south of Route 70, to be honest. I mean, there's a lot of areas in Illinois that looked really weak, beans especially, because they had a lot of rain, a lot of ground out areas were really short. And then when we were on a tour, that south of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, I mean, the crop was really short. Yield grew definitely lower. We've talked about Nebraska. Nebraska was down. It wasn't, near as good as it was last year. And in the west side of Iowa was definitely a lot lower than what we'd seen in the past. I mean, our first stop was 135 yield. So that's pretty low for that area of Iowa. And you can tell, areas were hurt. So, can the eastern half of Iowa and some areas in Illinois and maybe Indiana, pull the corn yield up or help it maintain what it, guys are thinking? Possibly, but I really don't think so, because last year, as you said, we had a lot of states were really hitting it out of the park. This year, we don't. North Dakota's got a problem. South Dakota's got a problem. Kansas has got a major problem, especially that western area of Kansas. And then again, there's going to be pockets of Illinois that just have big holes in them in the cornfields and bean fields from too much rain too early. And then, don't forget about all the rain that went through recently through Indiana, parts of Ohio with all the wind and everything. I mean, some of the corn in this field is down, and we didn't have near the wind, anything close to what the wind was like up, north. So I can see, even harvested corn acres come down some, a few hundred thousand acres, for one reason or another. So nationally, I think the yield's going to come in under 180. Well, how much of it will we see next week? I think if they give us a nod, at least in the right direction, towards the, I don't say pro farmer number, they're not going to come down to that. But if they would come down a couple of bushels, I think that would, give the bulls more fodder to kind of keep this thing going with everything else that's going on in the world. But I think eventually we can see something closer to 176 or somewhere in there.
Shane, if you could pick up on the demand side, are you concerned that we're running behind enough on new crop corn sales that it could offset anything that USDA does with yield?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're going to make drastic changes in that measure. From my eyes, my concern is that this is more of a rally that's probably led on a shrinking crop versus the growing demand. But, when we sit down and really look at it, yeah, we're high priced. Like I mentioned earlier, it's been a while since we've seen a flash sale. But if we look, Brazil has also started to creep up in their price. And so, on the world market, we're still probably, on a level scale. I just don't think that we make a bunch of big challenges or big changes as we look. And, I've been kind of talking with guys. If you look at corn, it's more of a global picture, I think, supply issue, demand issue, whereas beans were maybe more focused on what's going on right here in the United States. And so if I look at the buying today, and I'm someone that's trying to buy U.S. corn, given the fund length and the fact that we've seen no harvest pressure or anything, I'm likely to sit on my hands if I'm them and see if we can get, a little sell-off in the harvest before I start to, cover my needs. And I think that's where we sit today.
Matt, if you think back over the previous 2 months, July and August, I'm wondering if you can, and I don't know whether you, I think this is hard to suss out, but you might be able to give me some explanation. How much of the rally is due to war, whether that's Black Sea or Iran, or both together? And how much do you think is anticipation that there is a weather issue in the U.S. crop?
I think to kind of answer that and what Shane was talking about, my opinion on this, this summer, of course, demand's been phenomenal. We know that. We ate up such a huge chunk of the biggest crop we've ever grown, and that was the biggest crop we've ever grown by a billion bushels. So, clearly a massive crop that we had last year. So demand was really strong. But, if you can raise enough to kick the can down the road, the market's shown us the last 3 years, that we're not going to take off and rally. And so, what was the rally due to? I think it's a combination. I mean, you intersected a strong demand situation with a supply concern, and clearly you've got geopolitical forces that are wreaking havoc. So obviously world export flows out of the Black Sea region, not to mention corn. We know Ukraine is Typically running about fourth as far as world exports go. The USDA really didn't acknowledge a whole lot of pullback. I believe they took a million tons out of Ukraine's export situation, but it could be significantly different than that. And I think the trade knows that. So I do believe that the trade has been watching the U.S. weather situation, as you suggested. But to go back to what something Sherman said, you know, I also think the trade's watching very closely to see how this super El Nino impacts certainly South America. But if you look at, you know, what the correlations are for other parts of the world, whether you're talking Australia, South Africa, Indonesia, Malaysia, I mean, there's a lot of feed grain production, rice production that could be impacted by this. And I clearly think that the trade is already considering that. I'm not saying it's the main driver. I just think there's a whole host of drivers that are putting them in the position where they want to own these any sort of feed grains. They want to own oils. There's no question that soybean oil is not the only one they're buying. So I think it's a whole host of things. But to get down to the crux of the matter, I think it's a combination of a really good demand-driven market that's intersected with supply. And you get that supply shock on a demand-driven market, and it can be pretty exciting.
Of the crops, Sherman, on the planet that have been impacted, it is palm oil in Indonesia that has taken the brunt of what has been promulgated so far by the El Nino. That can and has in the past had an impact on soybean oil. And of course, you have the intersection there of what's been happening in Washington, D.C., and the SREs and RVOs and RFS that seems to be and have been either it has been satisfied or kicked down the road till October. I'm not sure quite which one. It feels more satisfied than not. But how do you watch all of those things at the same time?
I mean, right. I mean, it's you take a look at what's going on in the bean oil. I mean, they really sold it off because they thought they were going to get a really bearish outcome from Washington. But it wasn't near as bearish as they thought. So you had this rally come back into bean oil. Now that's really kind of helped bring, you know, the beans back up to a certain extent as well. So yeah, you got to watch all that. I mean, you know, you got China now having record heat, having some flooding. They're having some issues on their crops. So there's a lot of things you got to watch as far as around the world is what the other crops are looking like. But, you know, China demand is here. I mean, they're coming back in. I think they're, you know, they're buying that 25 million metric ton, or they're working on it, you know, that they said they were going to be buying. I mean, that's, you know, baked into the USDA's carryout, you know. But what's not baked into the carryout is if they come back in and add on this $17 billion program that has been talked about from Secretary Bessent. You know, so if that would happen and, you know, China comes in and buys corn right now, boy, what's that going to do to the market? That's going to give us another leg up in this corn market as well, because there's going to be more demand that we weren't looking for, you know, and maybe that's predicated on, you know, what's going on over there. And again, they're looking at that El Nino thing going on in Brazil, or possibly as well as what else is going on around the world. So there's, like Matt said, you know, you throw in a little bit of a production problem when you're starting to really look at some really strong demand globally. Sure, you start looking at balance sheets now. Once we get the WASD numbers start to come out, you know, those carryouts are going to change. But what's going to make the carryout, you know, you can't take it bushel for bushel. You know, you're not going to end up with a 1.1 bushel carryout, billion bushel carryout, because you're going to have to cut demand. Well, how do you cut demand? You do that by raising prices. So I'm not saying, you know, the carryouts can't be cut, but I think, you know, we're still got higher prices to go, because I don't think we've really slowed demand down any at all.
Okay, so I think that I get the sense that all three of you are friendly to bullish the marketplace, but cautionary as well. So what should producers do at this point, if anything, about new crop corn sales? Shane, I will start with you.
In our neck of the woods, you know, we're seeing a really, really strong basis to wrap up the summer here. And historically, you know, when we come into September and go out of September with a strong basis, we might see it give up a little bit in the gut slot of harvest. But typically that trails through to the next, you know, after harvest. And so what I've been telling guys is, you know, don't be afraid to sell some things, you know, provided the basis stays strong here. But be certain that you, you know, have got some ownership opportunities back. Keep some upside open. Really revisit your cash flow and cost of production, because things have changed a lot in the last 45 days. And so if you believed you missed the boat then, you know, go ahead and start looking at that. But, you know, keep your options open, as you alluded to. I'm friendly to the market, but, you know, sometimes the old saying is that pigs get slaughtered. So let's take advantage of what we've gotten put in front of us here.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts on new crop corn sales?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what Shane said. I think ultimately, when you've got a three-year high in prices, you've got to respect that. I know a lot of growers say, well, I sold some corn, you know, back at whatever it might be, $4.50, or, you know, I always ask them, well, why'd you make the sale originally? It was because I could be profitable. And I know that $5.40 looks a heck of a lot more profitable basis the board. But, you know, does that mean that we ignore these opportunities? And so while I'm still supportive and friendly to the market, I think we've got to reward these types of levels, at least with some incremental sales, or at the very least, locking in a floor in. None of us knows what tomorrow's going to bring. We can talk about the bullish things all day long. And again, I think we're all somewhat friendly based on everything we're seeing, but we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So I don't want to be in a position where we snub our nose at some of the best prices we've been able to enjoy in quite some time. So I'm all about incrementally rewarding the market, but doing so with a degree of flexibility that if this thing does take off on another bender, that we can participate at least to some degree.
And Sherman Newland, I would like to know from you, but first, thank you for allowing me at least into your combine cab. I have had a blast watching that. And it's just the grain tank. I can see it behind you fill up and empty out and fill up and empty out. What do you think about new crop corn sales?
Corn sales. Yeah. I mean, I was in a meeting the other day and farmers asked me, so do you think corn's going to $6? I said, yeah, I think it can under the right circumstances. So you're saying we shouldn't sell? Like, no, I didn't say that. I think, you know, especially if you've made zero sales, I've talked to guys that have made zero sales. I think you absolutely have, you know, some sales, especially everything you can't store on the farm, you know, and you got to take the town, take advantage of this higher prices. But the other flip side of it is I've talked to guys that have made way too many sales at a lot lower levels because they thought, you know, we couldn't go any higher. And, you know, we might even go down. Well, that, you know, hasn't come to fruition. So I do like making some sales up here for corn and beans both. But we have been, you know, covering all our sales pretty much with some sort of call option strategy, just in case, you know, we can go higher, but which I think we can. But I do think, you know, being flexible, but also, like everybody else says, take advantage of what we've been given so far. And let's, you know, see where we go as we get into harvest.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You may hear the whole of this program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, willag.org. And I would like to take time today to welcome the folks in Western Illinois that are listening to Commodity Week on Tri-State's public radio out of Macomb and other areas, including Burlington, Iowa. We appreciate you are there. And I'd also like to welcome RCM Co-op to our Ag podcast. They are posted on the co-op's website. So if you are a member of RCM Co-op, they're in the Springfield and West area in Illinois. We do appreciate them and their ability to allow us to be there on the website. You'll also find information, by the way, too, on that website from the Ag Economist, the Crop Scientist, and the Animal Scientist from here at the University of Illinois. You've been listening to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.